You're listening to The Training Dummies. With Rob.
Ah, the gods favor me with your presence.
And Daryl.
Sometimes I just want to step into the light. Maybe get a hug, too.
Greetings and welcome to number episode 116. Is that it?
That is it.
I didn't update that. 116 of The Training Dummies, recorded for you on January 21st, 2016. My name is Rob, and I'm super hyped about the show tonight because we have on a guest that I have been a fan of for a very, very, very long time, and I got to meet him at BlizzCon and knock that off my bucket list. Mm-hmm. But before we get there, also joining me is my bro host, Daryl. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. I am doing very well. How are you doing?
I am seriously super, super hyped. I've been like running around like, So earlier I was saying something about, I just kept talking about it. My wife was like, okay, whatever. And then my daughter's like, what is Pally time and why are you so happy about it? I was like, oh, you have much to learn. Well, there it is. Pally time. Thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight.
No problem, man.
I know.
I'm happy to be here.
We've been emailing back and forth forever, it seems like, but we finally got it nailed down, and it's good. It's good. Things are right in the world. Before we get into all the goodness of the Heroes of the Storm talk, maybe we'll ask you some of our interview questions and get to know you a little bit, and then
sure.
And then we'll get on. So, how, what, when did you start playing Heroes, and what is your favorite hero to play?
I first got into Heroes because of TGN. They got me in about a month after the alpha went live and, kind of been playing just about every day since then. So a little over 2 years, almost 2 years. I think it's almost 2 years.
That is so crazy that it's 2 years. It doesn't seem like it's been out though.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I think it's coming up on 2 years. I'm pretty sure. I'll have to go look at some video dates, but it's been a long time. And from the very beginning, I gravitated towards Stitches from like day one. I played a ton of League prior to Heroes and, a ton of Blitzcrank, and just landing those hooks is my favorite part of the game. So that carried over and has stayed true this whole time.
What is the origin of the name MF Pally Time?
You have to be careful with that.
I can guess the MF. I can guess the MF.
Well, the fun part about the MF is it's like we brand it as so many different things these days. Like
my friend.
Yeah, exactly. It could be super raunchy, or it could just be my friend Pally Time. Or I used to abbreviate my name as MFPT, and like I had people calling me milk, French toast, pancake toast, and just weird things. It can mean whatever you want, and that's perfectly acceptable. The Pally Time part came from back in Vanilla WoW. I was a bit younger. I didn't have very much income, and I was playing on a private server with some of my friends, and the tools for that, like the administration tools on private servers, weren't very developed. So in order to let everyone know that it was me and I was an admin and I could help if something, went wrong, I named all of my characters Time. So I had like Party Time and Mage Time and of course Pally Time. And then, when Burning Crusade came out, I kept the Pally Time name, leveled up to 70, and the name stuck. It stuck like glue. I'm still using it today.
I know, it's amazing that a Warcraft name is still kind of your moniker after. Mm-hmm. And you're not even really playing WoW much these days, right?
Well, I have access to the alpha, and I turned it on.
Yeah, dude, get in there, man, because the alpha is pretty rocking, and I'm having a blast in there. Yeah, yeah.
I made a monk. A healing monk, and I was like, because I did the level 100 boost on the live servers, and I was like, cool, I'm getting used to this. I can deal damage and heal, or I could just heal, and just kind of the weaving of the stances in there. And then I got onto the alpha servers, and I was like, this is totally different. I like it. Yep.
I think they're getting rid of the fist weaving or whatever.
Yeah,
I've played through most of the artifact lines, and absolutely love almost all of them, so I may be biased, but I recommend it.
It's definitely a pretty cool way to start the expansion for sure.
Yeah. What would you say is your most fond memory in or because of gaming?
Oh, I have so many.
Besides meeting me at BlizzCon. No,
that's the pinnacle, of course. I have so many. You know, I used to be a competitive Halo player, and going to my first tournament, which ended up being like a free-for-all, you just kind of walked up and got on a station and you would see how it went. You know, that I still remember that very fondly, even though I got annihilated by a Halo 2 Pro. This is right at the release of Halo 3. Something about that motivated me to become better at everything. And then, you know, there's the wow memories of I met all of my best friends that I still hold dear today, or the majority of them, through World of Warcraft forever ago. And then, you know, I think the best moment, there's several more, but the best moment was when I realized that I could do some good in the world by playing some video games. I found out about the Extra Life charity, and which is just a charity event where you play games for 24 hours. You live stream it, and then people can tune in. And if they want to help your cause, they can donate. I get to pick the hospital that the funds go to, and specifically, I've helped out the Arnold Palmer Children's Hospital every year. That started out as just something I wanted to do, you know, for it sounded like fun to do over the weekend. Try to stay up 24 hours, play games, and see if anyone comes by. But it's become something that I look forward to every single year. And yeah, I've raised over, I won't tell you the total because I don't know it for sure. But this year, or last year, I guess, because it's 2016 now. I did raise over $17,000 in one day to help Children's Hospital.
Jeez, that's amazing.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I think I ranked number 30 in the entire, you know, the entire charity drive. And there were some big names on that list. So that felt amazing. And being able to do that because of gaming, it has always been really rewarding and something I'm proud of.
That's awesome.
That is awesome. What is your favorite role to play in Heroes?
I like warriors a lot. I guess they're all kind of aggressive, but the ones that can jump in and really initiate hard, I've always really enjoyed. And, melee assassins for pretty much the same reason. Something that can jump right into the middle of a fight and get their hands dirty. I always find that pretty rewarding.
Are you loving, Greyman?
Oh, yes. Oh, so much. Everyone was saying I'm playing him like a coward. Like, I came up with a build that's all about poking and and staying safe. But then, like, right when someone's health gets low, you flip the switch and you dive in hard and make sure you get a kill. I love that play style.
I feel like that's kind of the vibe that he puts out anyways, you know? You want someone
it
to kind
of should be.
Get comfortable and think that they're all right, and then you hit that, whatever, the W ability, you know, turn it up a notch, and then they're kind of like, and they start to settle in again, and then bam, you know, just going to nail it.
I love his play style. It's so addicting. Like, even when I'm playing other characters now, because I spent a ton of time with him when he came out, even when I'm playing other characters, I would be like, well, if I was Greymane right now, I could have gotten that kill. You know, I have that mentality.
Nice. Yeah. How would you compare Heroes of the Storm to other MOBA games?
Well, I played a ton of League of Legends in the past, and there's a reason I'm not playing that any longer.
Nice.
I think a big part of it is the fact that, you know, I can pick whatever character I want to in a quick match setting. I've always thought that was a great way to approach things. I remember when I was playing League, I purchased a solid state hard drive and installed it on my computer and, you know, just completely optimized the client to load into games faster so I could use my copy paste macro that I made prior to the game starting and being like, mid, I want mid lane. And, you know, God forbid you get into an argument with someone about it, you know, then you're committed to 45 minutes of playing something you didn't want to play in the first place. And I think that entire approach to a competitive game like this, it's just wrong. And I think that's one of the things that really stuck with me about Heroes from the very beginning. The fact that, well, I feel like playing Stitches now, and there's really no one that can tell me not to do that. Until you go into Hero League, which is probably why I don't have a ton of Hero League games under my belt as of right now.
I have not played a single placement match.
I don't blame you. Those placement matches, man, they're a nightmare.
Okay, so originally I didn't do it just because I was scared or wasn't apprehensive or just like, yikes, you know, like just don't feel ready for it. And then when I got to the point where I was like, all right, let's do this, matchmaking was just all the rage at that point, literally. Yeah. So I just was like, you know what? It's not going to do me any good to jump in now and possibly, you know, come up with a terrible rank and try and climb out of that hole than just to wait until they get it fixed. And then they're probably going to do a MMR reset or a wipe or, you know, some sort of adjustment. And I can get in at that point, I guess.
That's basically the situation I'm in right now. Prior to the reset, you know, I'm used to things resetting. We had a complete account wipe, basically, in alpha and in beta. Mm-hmm. But when I was doing Hero League, I finally, you know, started playing some games prior to the reset. Mm-hmm. I think I was account level 22, somewhere in that neighborhood. Then they reset and make us do placement matches. And I'm like, okay, this won't be that bad. You know, whatever. I didn't play a ton of Hero League anyway, so I wasn't too upset about it. I do my placement matches, and I lose 16 of them in a row. 16 out of the 20. And it wasn't like I was on tilt for one day. I broke it up over like a month. I was like, okay, yeah, we'll just play a couple of Hero League games, see how it goes. Lost 16 in a row. It was awful, and I ended up at like rank 39 or something, just about as low as you possibly could.
Gosh, yes, yeah.
I'm still working on climbing out of that hole. I think I'm back up to 18 as of right now. So
wow,
it's moving. It's moving in the right direction.
Well, Gerald, do you have any other opening questions?
No, I don't think so. Do you?
Oh, I could probably come up with a bunch, but I think we have a pretty good itinerary here. So.
All right, then.
This is Mick Montgomery from The Starting Zone, Stormcast, and Convert to Raid, and you're listening to The Training Dummies with Rob and Daryl.
If you have any questions or comments or just want to find out what we're doing, we're active on Twitter, at Training Dummies. Rob is at Rob Copeland, and myself, Daryl, is at Hend_TTD. All right, Rob, this is all you. I'm going to let you take over, and I will jump in occasionally.
So, one of the... What a lot of shows do with Heroes of the Storm is that they kind of will talk about the esports scene, talk about whatever news is out, and then nail down one hero. And I wanted to try and do something a little bit different tonight with the heroes talk, and maybe just give you know, more about taking the game to the next level, which is something that I feel like I struggle with. I still play a lot of AI matches, and I play every single hero I've got. I'm at least at level 6, and you know, and I do all that, but I feel like I'm struggling to take that to the next level. I think there's a lot of people out there who are casual enough that we're all kind of in that same boat. So I was thinking maybe we can talk about some strats to become more successful, I guess. It's a broad topic, but I have some stuff here that maybe we could go over, get your opinion on. What do you think? Maybe I'll start off with this first one here. What's your opinion on the camera, locked or unlocked?
Okay, so I have a friend who, one of these friends that I've known for years, and he was part of my great group of friends that I made in WoW that I still play games with today, but he never really got into MOBAs. He recently has dove into Heroes headfirst. He's account level 40. After a long time, he plays a lot of Warriors, so you know, he's used to being on the front line. And then when he switched over to support, he was playing as Karazim, and he kept complaining that his camera would be moved around, even though his camera is locked. Like, oh, I was going to try to jump to this guy, but my cursor moved. And I was like, well, how does your cursor move? And I was perplexed by this idea. It's because his camera's locked. So let's say Diablo, a very popular character right now, goes into the skew ability, his shadow charge or whatever it's called. I don't actually know. And he knocks you like a few hundred pixels on the screen. Well, that moves your cursor as well if your camera's locked all the time, which is a pretty big problem when you're trying to land skill shots or click on something quickly. So I don't recommend that anyone locks their camera ever. In fact, from that point on, I started yelling, I lock your camera. What are you doing?
Really? Okay.
We're going to lose this game. I do have a workaround for it, and I do this in my videos all the time. You play with your camera unlocked. So you can move your camera around the screen freely at any point. But then when you need to center on yourself, and I do this all the time, you hold down the space bar, and that puts a nice pillar of light above your head. You can have it centered on you as long as you need it to be. I can't think of any instances where I specifically use it because I use it so often that it just feels second nature and I don't even notice it anymore. But things like your cursor not being where you left it isn't much of a problem with that method.
I know that there's a couple of people who make arguments for either case, locked or unlocked. And I played unlocked for a little while, and I felt like I was starting to get the hang of it. And then I went back to playing locked again, and I still do the screen movement thing around a lot, and I still look around on the map a lot. But I don't know what is my aversion to unlocking it. I feel like it's one more thing that I have to manage, and I feel like sometimes it's almost too much. And if I know that the camera is going to just stick with me and I don't have to worry about it, but if you're saying that it'll impact your skill shots and just
that's what he said to me. Now, I don't know if that's what actually happened. That was my theory based off of the information that I was given, basically.
I remember the first few games I played of Heroes, and I was getting really frustrated because the camera was unlocked and I didn't know how to lock it. And my camera was all over the place. And I remember getting frustrated going, this is the stupidest game ever because the camera won't stay with my character. And I didn't know about the space bar trick. I didn't know about L to lock it or unlock it. And it was just, so I've stayed locked ever since because I was so unable to function with it unlocked in the beginning. And because I didn't know any, you know, space bar or everything to change it or so that it centered on my character at the time, I've just completely sworn it off.
I think it's one of those things. The way I approach video games, you know, this is talking about how to take your game to the next level, this whole section. I've always, since my Halo 3 days, I've always approached games very methodically. Like, I used to boot up Halo and be like, well, I need to work on my battle rifle shots because it was like a three-shot headshot kill if you did it properly. So I would be like, that's all I'm going to do today. And that's all I would do every day until I saw some noticeable changes. So, I mean, it's the same situation, I think. If you feel you would play better without your camera locked, then just work on that a little bit every day. You know, go back and forth. If you're getting too frustrated, stop. But I think I don't know how much of an impact it actually has on a player because Heroes doesn't lock your camera as harshly as other MOBAs do. Like, you can still look around.
That's what I feel like. You still, you know, as you mouse side to side or up and down, that you still get a pretty wide view. You know, you can push your character almost off the screen just by looking in the far direction.
Yeah, and because of that, I'm not sure. See, the problem is I haven't played with it locked ever because I was used to it.
Dude, just okay. So next time you play with it locked and just see.
So if the knockbacks and the moving of your character really does throw off your cursor and your placement, your timings, then absolutely, I'm 100% advocating to never play.
With I don't
the
know. I don't think I've ever had that quite happen. Quite
could just be it. Could just be an excuse in the heat of the moment. You don't know.
All right. So I'm gonna try it unlocked again. See how that goes. I have a buddy of mine. Like he would probably slap me if he knew that I still if I went back to playing locked again. But how about the map pinging? And that and I know that you know when you're on voice with your friends, that's one thing. But some of the communication that's built into the game, some of the ping commands, you know, retreat and asking for help and defend. How important is that kind of thing in a quick match or a, you know, playing a random game setting?
Oh, incredibly important. Absolutely. Should be one of your top priorities. Again, when I was playing with my group of friends, or specifically when I wasn't playing with my group of friends, but I was still talking to them on Skype or, you know, TeamSpeak or whatever. Mm-hmm. I would hear them complain, oh, why didn't he do this? Or, you know, why didn't he do that? I was like, well, did you ping that you're going over there? He was like, no, I don't know how to do that. You know, so whenever I play, again, it's one of those things that it's so ingrained in my play style. I don't even think about it anymore. When an objective is spawning, I usually just ping that I'm on my way or on my way over there. I ping retreats constantly. I ping danger. When let's say I'm in middle lane on a map and I notice that my lane opponent is missing, I'll ping danger in both directions, letting them know that maybe they're going to be ganked. And that requires me to communicate a lot faster without typing. And there is a bit of room for miscommunication there. Like, oh, why did he just ping danger? That's pretty open-ended. You know, we don't have a missing ping or anything, but, for the most part, people react to that pretty well.
I know that V is the hotkey for retreat.
Yes.
Or now, do all of the other pings have their own hotkeys? Because normally what I end up doing is hitting Alt and then just pinging on the map where I want and then just, you know, you can drag it in whatever direction. And sometimes it feels like this is super annoying. Are there other just single key pings?
Not that I'm aware of. They may be hidden in the options, like if you wanted to keybind specific things. Mm-hmm. I actually always use G for my ping button instead of Alt for some reason. But yeah, the G is and drag is what I always do.
Yeah, yeah. And you just drag whatever, defend or on my way or whatever.
And really, that can have a pretty meaningful impact on the other player's decision making. Mm-hmm. Like if they know you're on your way and you're not quite there yet, if you ping danger while you're still on en route, that they can play substantially differently because of that.
Now, I noticed, and I think I'd heard this on maybe it was the Lords of the Storm podcast, but if you ping something specifically, if you ping a merc camp or a player specifically, it'll say, Palatine wants to do this, and that'll come up in your chat window. But if you ping just barely off to the side of it, it'll still ping the map. Mm-hmm. Like just a click, but it won't say who it is.
Correct.
I think sometimes I've tried that, and I think I don't know if that really does create an awareness, or people start seeing that spot on the map getting pinged, and then they maybe focus there or go there. You think it's better to try and give specific, I need help here, or defend here, or retreat, or do you think the subtle pings are helpful?
The problem with the normal ping, I think, is that it doesn't give any actual indication on the battleground itself. You can see it on the map, the red kind of beacon.
Yeah.
But all the other pings, when I say I'm en route to here, it places a foot on the ground and it shows an arrow me going towards that foot. So they know that I want to go specifically right there and the direction that I'm coming from. The general just red ping gives no information whatsoever. So I always try to give the little bit more of an in-depth ping in most situations, just because it gives a even more visual stimulus about what I'm trying to communicate.
I think that the more communication we can give, the better. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I feel like the trying to type something out is just in the middle of a game that this fast-paced is difficult.
Oh, absolutely. I was doing a quick match stream, a Hero League stream earlier today with my duo queue friend, and we started making mistakes as we were trying to just type more to our team and keep them rallied behind the cause. We were making mistakes, walking into things, missing turn-ins, stuff like that. It is very time-consuming.
So, all right. I've got follow the leader, and I think what I had in mind was this whole, usually some person on the team kind of emerges as the leader. Mm-hmm. And I guess like to your death, almost to the point. Do you agree with that strategy of, even if you don't agree, do it anyways?
Part of me does and part of me doesn't. Specifically, I feel like less experienced players in general never know when to kill a core.
like several people today I learned.
yes, exactly like that. Several people on the enemy team can be dead. Usually if you have significant numbers advantage, like a 5v3 or a 5v2. And it's at the 20-minute mark of the game, that's people dead for 60 seconds on the enemy team. That's a ton of time to move in and deal some serious damage to their core. Even if it isn't a game over scenario at that point, you're still doing incredibly meaningful damage to the structure. Unfortunately, what happens in a lot of circumstances is people think, well, we have plenty of time here. This is a great chance to go get a mercenary camp or go get a boss or go get the objective or push this other fort down. Mm-hmm. Which, I guess all of the strategies are debatable to some point. But it's so difficult for me to follow someone into doing a less optimal play. Although even in that circumstance, it's better that your whole team stays together and alive and ready for battle. So, I mean, there's arguments for both sides. I guess it depends who your leader is.
I know. I had a match, I want to say it was yesterday, on Cursed Hollow, and we had just gotten the curse. We had gotten the third tribute, and we had gotten the curse, and one of the guys was, like, hellbound that we were going to go and start getting up camps at this point. And I was like, I can push down this whole fort right here. Let's just do this real quick. And this guy wanted to go get camps, and I was like, I don't know.
It also depends on the character you're playing, right? So Sylvanas, for example, on Cursed Hollow, very, very good at split pushing. She can kill the lane very quickly, even without the curse, and has relatively safe escape as long as she sees the threat coming. So a character like that, or a character like Murky or Avatar, of course, they can get away with split pushing a little bit more. But yeah, following someone blindly, I don't think is the best idea, because you don't, if you're just queuing into a system with the guy, you don't know their experiences. Maybe giving your input at certain times to see if the team agrees with that. Again, you could just use pings to say you want to go here rather than taking a mercenary camp. I don't think you should blindly follow anybody. Even your own calls. I was making some pretty bad calls today on stream, but my buddy Hengist was showing me the light, guiding me in the right direction.
Do you find yourself kind of emerging as the leader in a lot of games that you play?
By myself, yeah, I do. When I play with other people, I like to let them do it, though. And I'm not too sure why that is. Just because I like following the leader more, I can... It's not as stressful for me. I don't have to worry about what I'm doing and what everyone else is doing. I can just worry about what I'm doing and trying to help out the team.
So if you jumped into a game and you were kind of like trying to rally or organize or come up with a strategy, and then someone else also was trying to do that, what would you kind of concede the shot calling, or would you push your idea if you thought your idea was better?
It is completely dependent on the situation.
Yeah.
Completely. Like, I can't give a yes, you know, I would do this answer to that. Totally depends what's going on.
Yeah, a lot of times, you know, right before we started tonight, I was telling you that I was completely getting trolled for soaking, by starting off the game by soaking a lane by myself. And next thing I know, this guy's pinging me like nonstop and, you know, saying some pretty colorful things. And at that point, I was like, all right, I'm just going to mute this guy. But, you know, who do we even follow at that point? Because, you know, obviously we disagreed about how things were going to go. And I don't know. It worked out mainly because I muted him and just tried to be a team player. But I don't know. I guess, like you said, just depends on the situation.
I'm going to butcher something that Total Biscuit once said, but I hope I can get the main point across. I think it's better in Heroes than most other MOBAs. But let's say in League, for instance, because that's the other one I have experience with, right? You're bringing 10 strangers together in a game that is completely about teamwork. League was a lot more snowbally than Heroes. You know, Heroes does have comeback mechanics, despite popular opinion. But you're taking these 10 strangers and you're forcing them to work well together. You don't know anything about these people. You don't know what kind of mood they're in today, whether or not they're actually paying attention to the game or anything like that. And you're basically saying go. And of course, there's going to be conflict in a situation like that. Everyone has different opinions and ideals and all that kind of stuff. So people are all it doesn't matter. It doesn't even matter if you're queuing with all of your friends. Someone's going to disagree about something. And I just think it's your ability to deal with that really matters, and not necessarily who's right or wrong in that circumstance.
Now, Daryl, I know you like to emerge as the leader a lot when we're playing. Do you have a hard time giving up that control?
In Heroes? No. No problem at all, because I don't know what's going on half the time. And every time I'm in that dragon one, I swear I've never been there. So I don't even know how that works.
That is classic.
Well, to be fair, the Dragonshire map, I mean, it plays out differently every single time. Every time.
Man, I played one the other day where we didn't even get... No one was even able to get the dragon for... Yep. It was like 15 minutes and we're still going and no one's even gotten the first dragon yet. And yeah, I mean, it's fun though. I mean, it's good that it's not the same thing every single time, I suppose. I guess that leads into some map strategies then. Maybe do you have just off the top of your head, when you walk into some of these different maps, do you have little tricks of the trade that you look at and you go, oh yeah, I definitely want to do that when, you know, pull these mercs at this time? And I guess we're not doing Haunted Mines anymore, so that trick, the old trick about pulling that camp as the golems coming by, isn't really a thing anymore. But what are some good ideas for some of the different maps?
Well, there, in certain circumstances, there are some strategies still centered around mercenary camps. They're not necessarily employed, whatever the word is, as much as the Haunted Mines one. But like on the Curse Hollow map, Like, say the enemy team takes top right boss, that'll push the top lane. If your fort's already dead, you can just take that Camp of Siege Giants at the top left.
Mm-hmm.
You can wait for the boss to get right up to your tier 2 defense structures and just take that camp, and it'll walk out and kill it pretty quick.
Oh, wow. That's...
But, I mean, it's not like a widely known strategy. And at most points in the game, if your fort's dead and your keep's still alive, your team's probably strong enough to just kill that boss as it is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, it helps, but it's not vital to success like it was on the Haunted Mines map.
Mm-hmm.
On Crescent Hollow, there's also a way to predict the curse spawns if you know the first two.
Oh, yeah, isn't it? It's kind of a formula. It's
Actually going to make a video about that this weekend, actually. But I like to think of the map as a tic-tac-toe board.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With the middle lane being the middle section. So you have the top three spawns and the bottom three spawns. And if you know where the first two spawn, like if it's bottom left and bottom middle, then you know that the third tribute is going to be top right because it blocks out all the other possibilities. But, you know, that's not 100% because sometimes it spawn out of order. But you can actually keep track of curse spawns quite well by doing that. There's some strategies on the Infernal Shrines. That's the one with the Punishers, right? I always get those mixed up.
I believe so. Yeah, the Shrines is the Punishers.
Where you want, if your team loses the battle for the Punisher, you want everyone on your team behind the walls of your towers.
Mm-hmm.
That way the Punisher will walk up to the towers without using his jump mechanic. Then one person gives the Punisher vision that you're behind the wall, and then he'll hop over and be attacked by all four of your defense structures at one time. It helps you kill the Punisher much more quickly. I'm trying to think of more. I mean,
Anything on Sky Temple that stands out to you?
The only thing on Sky Temple is knowing the first three spawn locations for the temples.
Mm-hmm.
So in the first wave, it's always top and middle. And the second wave, it's always just bottom by itself.
Mm-hmm.
And then I believe after that, I don't even know the one after that. I think it can either be middle and top or middle and bottom, I think. I hope that's right. And then there's the one at the 20-minute mark where all three spawn. And that's kind of the big push for Blizzard to say, we want all of our matches to last about 20 minutes. Get this game over with.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How about the new map? The Towers of Doom.
Okay, there are some cool stuff. There is some cool stuff rather on that map. The new siege mercenary camps, the little suicidal pumpkins.
Mm-hmm.
They can deal core damage if you lead them all the way up to the enemy's base. So if you take the bottom keep and then push all the way up to that restricted zone that you're not allowed to walk into,
mm-hmm.
you'll deal one core damage for each mercenary, which is pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
Hard to do, but very cool. If you have two stealth assassins on your team, this has happened to me, and I've seen it happen to me. This actually happened via a ton in my first Grey main attempt. I was streaming. I was really excited about the character coming out because I loved him at BlizzCon. I load up, and Towers of Doom is the first map that I play. And it was versus a Nova and a Zeratul, of course. And at the 12-minute mark, that sewer system opens up and you're able to teleport from your base to the middle of the map. And I was like, cool, let's go back to the middle. And I took the sewer system, popped up, immediately dead. Essentially, you can just look at the spawn timers and mm-hmm. just camp people waiting for them to come out.
Oh, it's actually a pretty good way. Yeah, because you know that they're going to try to get back into the action as quick as mm-hmm. they can. Yeah.
And that's really easy to exploit on stealth assassins specifically. Gosh,
yeah, that would. what's your take on that map, anyways?
It's weird. It's very strange in Heroes to be able to have a numbers advantage, like 20-minute wipe the enemy team and not be able to do much with it.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I have the mentality of if you have numbers, rush core, win. And it's very jarring to play on a map where that's not the strategy. I don't know if you guys watched any of the Heroes Rising events that just happened at the Esports Arena.
I caught a couple matches just as I could, but no,
there was
I
a really didn't. Good match where I don't remember who they were playing against, but Murloc Geniuses picked Towers of Doom. And most of the games that happened over the course of that weekend were essentially, we have numbers advantage at level 20. Let's go win. Like, win a team fight, win the game, basically. And it was interesting to see Murloc Geniuses play that map and be able to control it so well. And it seemed like a complete counter to that strategy. And it was very interesting to watch. But I haven't quite gotten used to it yet.
I don't know. There's something about it that just hasn't clicked with me. A buddy of mine keeps calling it the Halloween map, and he's like, this is a seasonal map, you know? Like, there's something about it that just feels like it should, you know, after the holidays, it should be down now or something. I don't know. I love the creativity behind it. I'm just not sure that it's definitely not my favorite map.
Yeah. It was weird too because it came out after Halloween.
I know, that's the funny part. It came out even, you know, after BlizzCon and here we are, this full blown it's a Halloween map, pumpkins everywhere, and you know, the Headless Horseman. And
it's interesting to me that most teams that I play with don't really push lanes that hard either.
Mm-hmm.
They focus on just team fighting and then getting shrines, but not really increasing the amount of damage you can do by controlling more buildings.
It's super easy to take those towers back, the ones that are closer to your base. So sometimes it feels a little futile to try and do all that work into taking one of those, and then just to have it, you know, because you don't get a full blown, you don't get a healing fountain and everything on their side. So I don't know. Maybe that could be interesting, but maybe that would be too much. But Daryl, what's your favorite map?
My favorite map? I don't know if I have a favorite. I don't play enough to have a favorite.
Yeah.
I know I need to play more, but I always say that every time we do a hero show, I say that. I know I've done that, this Halloween one. I've only done it once and we got wrecked because no one was going after the shrines except me and one other person. So the other three, I don't know what they were doing. So right now,
is how you win that match.
I know. So. And we were trying to type to them and let them know, like, we need help at the shrines, but I don't know what they're doing. So I'm not too fond of that one at the moment because I don't have many good experiences with that. I'll say the dragon one just because it's still funny every time I say I've never been there. I don't know why, but I still chuckle to myself every time I say that. Is this a new map?
It's brand new.
Totally brand new. It'll never get old.
I've got a point here about diversifying, and I can't remember if it was one of your videos or if it was maybe another podcast that you were on recently where you talked about playing Rexxar and how that kind of was a turning point in the game for you. How important do you think it is to get your hands on as many heroes as possible and to try and become efficient or you know, at least good at different heroes?
Well, the thing that Rexxar helped me accomplish, he's classified as a warrior, but Rexxar himself is very delicate.
Mm-hmm.
And Misha, the bear he controls, is incredibly tanky. And you want to play Misha as aggressive as possible while keeping Rexxar as safe as possible. I had struggled to play a mages quite a bit prior to Rexxar coming out. Kel'thas specifically, when he came out, I loved Chain Bomb. From the very beginning, I didn't do any of those flame strike builds. Didn't like him at all. Mm-hmm. Chain Bomb was awesome. And I got him to level 10, master skinned him and everything because I was determined to get better. And by the time I hit level 10, I was at a 30% win rate. And it was just awful because I had the mentality of, well, I'm going to go in and kill everything. And I didn't, because of all the time I spent on melee assassins and warriors, like we talked about earlier, I like going into the middle of a conflict and emerging from that victorious, but can't really do that on mages. You have to mind your positioning. You have to be aware of everyone's cooldowns and what you can do and what they can do. So diversifying, it's helpful to understand the limitations of other characters. I, however, feel like, well, see, I upload all of my replays to Hotslogs just to get an idea of, you know, where my MMR is at. And I'm about 300 MMR off from being the tippy top.
Oh, wow.
And I feel like if I was just playing characters that I was great at, just every game, just going in with Stitches, going in with Falstad, characters I've developed builds for, spent a lot of time with, I know their limitations. I know what they can and can't do, what's good against them, you know, stuff like that. If I dedicated my time to that, I feel like my MMR would improve, but is that really a measurement that matters to me? No, no, it's not. What matters to me is being able to jump in, play whatever I feel like that day, and have fun doing it. So if that's the kind of player you are, then I think diversifying is great. If you're the kind of player who is, we went up against this guy in Hero League last week. He was called Only Nova. And guess what he played? And he was incredible at Nova. He was incredible. And you could tell that he was one of those guys that just plays to his strengths. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that either. Mm. It's purely dependent on the player. As long as you know a general idea of what every character can do, I think it's fine.
Well, in Hero League, though, you're not always going to get only Nova.
I think that's when he AFKs out. I'm pretty sure. I didn't actually look up his match history. I kind of wish I did.
Nopes right on out of there. That would be funny to see. Has he actually ever had to play another hero? But I know that I think not only for Hero League, but like in general, like knowing what the other classes are doing and knowing what it takes, you know, that Lili's Q is going to go wherever it's going to go. And knowing that, you know, for Karazim, that you want to be standing right next to him when that heal goes off. I think just understanding how these other classes work, you know, what their abilities are, I think it's going to, you know, make you more well-rounded, or at least help you know that when you're laning with a stranger, you know what tools they have in their kit.
Correct. Knowing what tools they have in their kit is very important, but you should also keep in mind that not everyone is going to play the character to the same level. I think that's important.
Yeah.
You can find a lot of Karazims who just have no idea what they're doing. Divine Palm in particular is always amusing for me to watch, because when Karazims can land it, it is the most beautiful and gorgeous thing in the whole world. But then you have these other Karazims that cast it like a minute and a half too early, like when there's no conflict at all.
Yep. We're getting ready to engage. All right, I'm gonna go ahead and put it on you now.
I'll just leave that there. It'll work out. Don't worry.
So we mentioned earlier a little bit of the state of matchmaking.
Yeah.
Where do you think we're at right now? I know a lot of changes are made in December, and you know, Dustin Browder has been a rock star at trying to communicate what's going on. What do you think is kind of the state of matchmaking and maybe where it's going, or should, you know, is Hero League even worth dipping your toe back into right now? Or?
This is going to be a long-winded answer, I think. I had the opportunity at the America's Championship to actually go out and eat dinner with Browder and just pick his brain for like 2 hours.
Oh,
and
it was
an incredible experience. And I told him about my horrible placement matches.
Uh-huh.
And he was like, "Oh, are placement matches too hard for you? You're not having a good time?" I was like, "Oh, you're hurting my soul. What are you doing?" But he said something that I think is really insightful, and I hope I can, I can repeat it. It's just a philosophy thing. He said, "Everyone who goes into Hero League wants to be the worst person on their team. Everyone wants to be able to look at everything that's going on around them and be like, wow, this guy is great, mm-hmm. you know, and you can follow them into battle. And that simply isn't going to happen." And that statement alone really stuck with me. And I've said this on my stream a couple times, you know, an MMR is just a number. Yeah, it's a good estimation of your skill when you have a ton of data under your belt, but it's just a number. And that number does not tell you if the person behind the keyboard is not feeling that great that day, or if they're in a bad mood, or if they're going through some personal stuff, or if they haven't, or if they're just AFK and not really doing anything. It also doesn't give you any indication of whether or not the person is very familiar with his character, whether or not the person has not played for the past 6 months and just used to be really good.
Right.
There's so many different variables that people do not consider when they look at matchmaking as a whole. And they're important variables that you can't measure with just a number. Well, the player skill, you know, how many, like if I queued up today as Lieutenant Morales, I only have 2 games ever as Morales. So maybe that could be factored in with MMR in some way, but all the other components are completely just variables that you can't calculate for. And I feel like most people don't think about those kinds of things. I think one of the things that has helped me with matchmaking quite a bit, several months ago, I was getting really upset because I would see like level 20s in my game.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, something around that. I have 2,000 games played. Why is there a level 20 in my match with me? I guarantee you there's no way he knows as much about the game as me. And they have taken steps to make it so that your number of games played has a more meaningful impact on who you get matched with. But there's also the possibility that that person is just playing with a very high MMR player. And, you know, that's level 40, rank 1, whatever. And they're just queuing together because they're friends.
Mm-hmm.
And the new implementation of being able to see who's queued with who on the loading screen, I think is great. Because that makes a lot more sense. That makes a ton more sense. And I can be
like, yeah, absolutely. You know, when those two immediately go to the same lane together, then you kind of expect that. And you kind of know what you're going to get the rest of the match.
Yeah. And even in Hero League, when I queue with Hengist, he was rank 1 and I'm rank 18, and people can see that we're in a party together, so they don't go, oh, why is this 18 in our group? This is ridiculous. Or why is this rank 1 in our group?
Yeah.
10, you know, that kind of stuff. I think that had a pretty meaningful impact for me. But I think matchmaking's in a pretty good spot right now. With the support rules being enforced, if one team has the support, both teams will. Mm-hmm. And stuff. Yeah, I think we have better matchmaking today than we've ever had in the past, and I know that's not a popular opinion right now.
I absolutely agree with you. I think they've made tons of changes to try and, you know, bring the quality to the matchmaking rather than the how quickly can we get you into a match, and I think that's what people want. I think it's time to just kind of relax and let them work on it. I think they're doing a good job, so.
I will say that I used to play a ton of games with this guy. His username is PunisherJJE, and I met him really early on. He watched my videos really early in the alpha, and he taught me how to play Illidan. And this guy, just a phenomenal player.
Uh-huh.
And it's funny because he plays on a computer that gives him like 6 frames a second, and he can,
oh, wow,
still just
bleed. Yeah, he's one of those guys, huh?
At one point, he was ranked like, I'm probably exaggerating, but like 100 in the world on Hotslogs. You know, he was that good. And it was always amusing playing with him because we would hit the 6-minute queue cap, or now the 10-minute queue cap. And then he'd have account level 1s on his team because they just don't know where to put him because his MMR is so high. So I don't experience that. And that's one of the reasons I'm thankful that I'm not in that top echelon. And I'm thankful that I just have characters I can't play and I still try to play them anyway because it brings my MMR down a little bit. Because I would lose my mind in that kind of a situation.
Yeah, I think having a bigger pool is better than having a really small pool with a super deep end to it. But
I agree.
So the hero release schedule over the past year has been basically every 3 weeks or so they put out a new hero. Do you feel like that is too much, or do you feel like that's right? Would you rather wait longer and have the bugs ironed out on a hero, or would you rather just have them cranking out heroes and fix the problems later?
I'm pretty understanding of both sides here, I think. I know that Blizzard has an internal testing team, and, you know, they develop these characters for a while and they get, they obviously refine them on their end before they're released to the public, but you're not going to get real detailed feedback about what's really going on until it's in the hands of, you know, several hundred thousand players at any given time. And that's when you can look at the data and really, look at what's going right and look at what's going wrong. There have been some instances, I think Lunara is a great example, where she just comes out and it's a totally different play style in the first place. And then she's also an incredibly hard character to play that's way too squishy and dies way too easy. Like, and they tested her internally and they didn't see that as much of a problem, but then we get her and there's just a massive backlash. So I kind of see both ends of the spectrum, and I think I know how long it takes for these characters to be developed. They said like 6 to 8 months per character, which is crazy. The fact that they're able to push them out every 3 weeks. I think the game needs more characters in general. But not just characters for the sake of having characters, characters that are actually competitive and characters that can actually fit into multiple team comps and make sense.
There's this feeling that you get when a new hero comes out and you're really excited for it. You know, I look forward to, I own every single hero. I don't have all their master skins and everything, but every single time a hero comes out, part of me is like, I don't care whether or not I am going to like this or be good at it. There's the collector in me that is like, yes, give that to me. I need to have that. And I think that some of what they're doing rides on people being able to kind of do that, you know, have that mentality, the folks that got out, you know, the Pokemon, got to catch them all kind of thing. I just hope that we're able to keep up the quality of the heroes. The D3 Wizard and the D2 Necromancer, I was kind of surprised that they did back-to-back Diablo themed characters. Are you hyped about either of those? Or
yeah, they had a video where they released more information about them this morning, because previously to today, all we knew was that all we knew about the upcoming characters were like sound files. So
yeah.
Today I've learned a lot. The wizard, for instance, super skill shot oriented, super mana hungry, and she's gonna be able to reset her cooldowns whenever she gets an assist or a kill, which is insane. So that's gonna be interesting to see how that plays out. And then the necromancer, you know, he summons dead things. Surprise!
That's what he does. Assassins, right?
I don't know. I think no. The wizard is a assassin, and the necromancer is a melee specialist. And they were very adamant that he was a melee specialist.
Oh, really? Okay, hey, that's cool. I remember playing the necromancer in D2 and just loving it.
The only other melee specialist in the game right now, and I hope I'm right, is Abathur, who is not melee at all. So it could be interesting to see how that plays out.
Well, if they do it right, I mean,
yeah,
I believe in the choices that they make for the most part. So I think it'll be good. But you think they can keep up the 3-week release schedule, or obviously, you know, work there? But I for some reason I feel like it's going to start moving more to like a monthly, you know, 4 weeks, or, you know, I know there was a push initially with the game being released to, you know, we need more heroes and we need them now kind of thing. But there's a fairly decent sized stable now, a pretty diverse hero.
I'm pretty sure it's going to drop down to a 3 to 4 week. Like 3 weeks optimistically, 4 weeks is what they're going to realistically do. Mm-hmm. And maybe a fifth week just when things don't quite go right. I think that's where it's going to be at. And I think that's fine. What the game needs more now is just frequent balance changes. Way more than we're getting
currently. That would segue nicely into the next thing here. But I wanted to ask you then, on the kind of tailing off on the hero release schedule, do you think there's going to be more maps? Do you think we need more maps? I mean, this is kind of a breaking the mold as it is to have this many maps for a MOBA, but Mines has been taken out of the rotation, but do we need more maps really?
I have spoken to one of the map designers before, and I asked him, you know, when do you call it quits on this? You know, when is enough maps enough? And he like got the biggest grin on his face and he was like, that's what map rotations are for. So I think they still have a ton of ideas that they want to try out. Mm-hmm. And you know, if they don't work out, like mines, after months that they decided that mines, you know, is a little bit too snowbally. If one team's ahead, the other team really can't come into the mines to do the objective. Which means they can't really push and they have to defend all the time. It's a little too hard to come back on. So I think if they want to try different strategies out, I don't have a problem with that at all. Something to shift up the gameplay, I think that's always a good thing.
Awesome. Yeah, I agree. Now, you were mentioning balance changes. That kind of leads us to where we're at right now. I guess maybe not right now with some of the changes that rolled out yesterday. Now, this Stunlock meta that's going on right now, are you seeing that a lot? Do you feel like that's just a real high end play? one of the, who was it? Chew? One of the guys wrote the letter and basically said, you know, the game is stale. This is where it's at. Stunlock meta sucks. I'm out, kind of thing. What's your opinion on, I mean, the meta is constantly shifting, but I mean, obviously we need frequent balance changes. How do you deal with that?
Well, it's interesting because these issues are, I don't even know if I want to call them issues, but these prominent play styles that develop seem to hover around for a really long time. I don't know if you guys remember Resurgence of the Storm. It was a level 20 talent that pretty much every single warrior could pick up. And what it did is on like a minute and a half cooldown or something like that, you would just respawn. You're just like, if you died, hey, I'm back in. Let's go back into the fight. So that led to just these really prolonged fights where nothing seemed to really matter. I think this was the case back at Heroes of the Dorm. I believe it was. And I remember I was sitting in the audience and like Arthas died or something. And I was like, well, that's meaningless. Like everyone cheered and lost their minds. Oh, someone got a kill. That was awesome. And I was just like, well, he's coming back. He'll be there in like 20 seconds. It's not a big deal. I wasn't a fan of that at all. And eventually that was, you know, pushed to the side and it removed and all the warriors were kind of reworked. And the stun thing, there was a sense that that was a problem a while ago when all of the healers got cleanse. I think that was to address some concerns that the game was a little bit too CC oriented. So they gave every healer cleanse. Previously, I don't remember. I was going to give you a list of the ones that had cleanse prior, but I don't remember. It was definitely Uther, I think Rhaegar, and I don't remember anymore, but it wasn't everybody. Aferian in particular, I believe, was kind of weird because he was a great healer, but he couldn't contend with the stuns that were going out. So they gave every support cleanse. Everyone's on the same plateau now. They're all equal. And then, well, cleanse is too good. We need to nerf it because all of a sudden, no crowd control mattered at all. And the healers just had too much power and they could just completely stop these awesome plays that people were trying to set up. So they nerfed it. And then the Stunlock meta came back. And now we're in another position now where cleanse as of yesterday now also gives 1 second of immunity. So you can't be chain CC'd theoretically. After cleanse is being used. So I think this has been something that has been around for a lot longer than people realize and something that Blizzard has tried to adjust in the past but keeps crawling back. And do I think it's a problem? It's just kind of the way the game is played now. And I don't think that's an issue. I've adjusted before. I'll adjust again. It's that kind of thing.
Yeah, but getting stunlocked to death,
it doesn't
fun.
Feel good.
No, never been fun.
And you could say that it would feel good doing it, but honestly, that's not the game I don't think that any of us want to play, is who can stun the other team to death first.
I think that's one of the reasons why Kael'thas has been so popular. Not only does he deal damage, but he can set up these chain stuns with his gravity lamps.
Mm-hmm. I've been playing him a lot lately, and he is super, super fun, but... But I mean, it just feels kind of cheap when you do like an empowered gravity lapse and, you know, you got three of their team in a chokehold and you're like, all right, I got this. Let's burst them down real quick. Or, you know, or somebody else, you know, Misha follow up with another stun and, you know, I don't know. It's just, it's not compelling, I guess.
I'm not sure how to fix the issue. I don't remember which team was quoted. It was one of the ones at the Heroes Rising event. Maybe it was Cloud9. They said that they enjoy the lethality of the game these days. They enjoy being able to just lock someone down and kill them. Mm-hmm. But the lethality is nowhere near what it used to be back in the original days of the Alpha. Mm-hmm. specifically, Tassadar used to just be a damage dealer. That's what he would do. You would build him. You would get focused attacks, so your auto attacks hit harder. You would get guaranteed crits on your Scythe Orb targets, and then you would get the red Archon at level 20, which made it so you could attack across the screen and basically kill anyone whenever you wanted to. Like, nice. That was lethality. What we have now is just CC train. Yeah, it's. I think it is rewarding for people to be able to completely just control a target. specifically with people you don't normally play with. Like when I go into Hero League, I do think it is rewarding to see Uther go in for a judgment, and then I follow up with the Misha stun right as the judgment ends, and we're able to just control that target. I do think part of that is fun, but when you're on the receiving end of that, it just, it's like that's a situation where I can see someone snapping their keyboard in half. Like they can't even.
Yeah, it's kind of the reason I don't really PvP in WoW. I mean, because that's the stun, chain stun, you know, like it's just, I'm just like, yeah, you throw your hands up and you're like, okay, great.
I don't know where the balance would be. It's gonna be up to Blizzard basically to dictate where the game goes from this point. They either make cleanse stronger or make it so certain stuns have a lower duration. I know they just nerfed Tyrande's stun, and in the same interview Dustin Browder just had that I was referencing specifically, it was with Razor talking about the new characters. He said that a lot of characters in the game have stuns that they don't necessarily need. So I thought that was interesting. He just kind of slid that in there and didn't really comment on it anymore. And I was like, oh, okay, Dustin.
Those little subtle comments, yeah.
Yeah.
I had something really awesome to say, I'm sure.
Okay, you can do it. What is it?
I know some people had no, I got it. People had suggested diminishing returns, but I think in terms of keeping things approachable, and once you start putting formulas behind everything and trying to figure that out, I think it takes it to another level too. So I don't know if that, we're just gonna have to trust that the brighter, smarter people over at Blizzard are gonna get that all sorted out. But it's gonna hinge again back to like what we're saying on more frequent balance changes, I think.
I think crowd control is a vital part of the game. I don't think anyone really disagrees with that. I think having certain characters on your team that are able to control the flow of battle is vital to the game being healthy. But in the current state of the game right now, in fact, I have a video coming up soon that you guys might enjoy. It was a stream highlight where I had a Tyrande on my team who was like, "You need to pick Diablo or we're gonna lose." and then I picked Artanis and I got called X with divs. They just typed LOL, like flooded the chat box with it because my Artanis pick was so bad. You know, he has a little bit of crowd control; he could swap places. But I picked him for more damage output because I felt like our team had a complete control. You know, they had enough crowd control. We needed to pump out more damage. And you know, I ended up being number one in everything and having a blast and really enjoyed myself. I do think characters like Tyrande and characters like Uther should exist, because that's important to be able to lock someone down. But I don't think a whole team needs to be based around that idea, and that's what we're seeing a lot.
This is the perfect time to answer this question from Jabcub from Twitter.
There you go.
He wrote in earlier today and said, do you think the nerfs to Tyrande were as much as a travesty as I did? Not cool, Blizz.
So the nerfs were longer cooldown on her trait. The nerfs were
which was ridiculous.
So fast.
And then you could talent it to be even lower, but her trait, the Hunter's Mark, that basically makes somebody vulnerable, right? I mean, that straight out of the gate, level one, that's what you're doing.
Yeah, that's a big deal because no other character in the game gets vulnerability until 16, I believe.
Yeah.
So that's huge. Being able to walk up to a tank at level one and all of a sudden they take 25% more damage, that's a gigantic advantage. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that advantage, but it's very strong. It's very, very strong. Definitely one of the reasons to pick Tyrande, right? The longer cooldown just means you can't do it as often. It's scaled back a little bit. I don't think that's a significant nerf. One of the other changes, I don't have them in front of me, so this is just off the top of my head.
The reduced stun duration.
Whatever. Get over it. That's pretty much where I'm at.
Yeah, I think damage. They nerfed her damage a little bit.
She's a healer. Get over it.
There you go, Jab. Get over it.
Nice. Build a bridge. Get over it.
I mean, these kind of changes are bound to happen, and she skyrocketed in win rate. So
she was no one can deny she was OP.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially with the shadow stock, since they made that update, I know people were super hesitant about that. But man, I love it when there's a on my team and that shadow stock is like on cooldown, man. You're just like, you're just doing your thing and all of a sudden, bam, getting healed up. You're like, all right, this is great.
It's funny to me that one of my favorite builds is just purely focused on cooldown reduction. And the changes added today don't really affect that build at all. So, I mean, it's all dependent on your play style. There's always more than one build for every character, or at least there should be. Illidan.
Yeah, Tyrande has a great kit, and I know that if you can land her stun anyways, then that...
Oh, she's going to make plays for sure. She's still going to make
reduced
plays.
By a quarter of a second or whatever it is isn't going to change the fact that that's still a super valuable stun. So
I guarantee you if that wasn't added to the patch notes, like if they just slipped that in under the radar, there's people who data mine the client, so they would notice. But the average player... They're not going to notice 0.25 seconds.
Yeah.
No way.
I wouldn't notice it. I would notice that I did not land the stun that I wanted to land. And I would try and hit them with an owl as they're running away just to spite them. But what would you say are maybe some advanced tips and tricks? Like, I mean, I'm not even speaking for listeners at this point. I'm speaking for myself. So if I'm asking you, like, what can I do? In general, obviously you haven't seen me play. You don't know, you know, if I'm terrible or not, but what are just some generic things that I could do that are going to help me out?
Well, generally speaking, if you are a character that can get Region Master or Conjurer's Pursuit, it's usually a pretty good idea.
Mm-hmm.
And focusing on that in the early game is very, very important because as the game progresses, it's a lot harder to go after region gloves because there's so many more things going on that have a higher priority. So depending on the map and depending on the character, like a Tassadar, I can usually get about 20 stacks of region gloves by the 12-13 minute mark. And that can make a huge difference later in the game. I like to say you're focusing on the early game to build a good foundation for the rest of your game to rest upon. You know what I mean? To build upon.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's super important. And that's something that most players who come into the game don't really focus on. And a while ago when I sat down and I looked at what I'm good at and what I'm bad at, just picking up region globes when I was in the game was one of the things that I could have done better. And I've actually seen a very meaningful increase in my ability to play the game when I have more health and mana. So it was definitely worth taking the time to invest in getting better in that. And these are just very open-ended because I don't know which characters you're trying to play. So
I play whatever is shiny when I log in. So it's been all about Kael'thas lately, but yeah, I love Sylvanas. I love Karazim. I don't know. It just depends. I was wrecking shop with Diablo the other night. That was really fun.
Well, great tip for Diablo that most people don't do, is just body blocking. You don't have to use your abilities on Diablo most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, go in with your Q, cast your W, deal some damage, and then just be in the way.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same with ETC. Just slide in as ETC and just be in the way. With Stitches, cast your ultimate, cast Bile. If you talent for it at 16, get slow on slam. You talent for it at 7, get slow on your auto attack. So just walk in front of people. And most of the time, that'll secure more kills than you using your abilities on that target or trying to, you know, race them in DPS. If your team's there and they're backing you up, just being a wall is so incredibly helpful. Auto attacking on the move using A and left click attack moving can be incredibly helpful if you're trying to kite away from someone. And it takes a little bit of time to get used to, but it's definitely worth getting used to on specifically characters like Vala or Falstad or Tim Raynor, you know, characters who can move away pretty easily. Being able to get that extra damage out while you're moving is pretty important and can really increase your overall damage throughout the course of a match if you're consistently doing it. And then there's the obvious, look at your map more. It's pretty easy to predict what people are doing in most cases. Which is why I'm so good with owls on Tyrande. I don't know if you guys have seen my owl skills. I'm trying to decide how I want to word this. But I'm like a Jedi with those things.
Nice.
And usually it just comes down to like figuring out like, oh, I don't see someone in bottom lane. Let's see if they're getting this mercenary camp. And then, oh, look at that. They are. And I just did 1200 damage to you. You know, stuff like that. I'm trying to think of some more. You know, there's the obvious don't pick talents just because someone told you to. Like pick them to go up against what you're going up against. Like on Diablo, for instance, you can build most players, what they do is build for their trait in the early game on Diablo, and then in the late game they build for their W ability. But if they have two mages on their team, instead of getting the W upgrade at 13, get spell shield instead. Or if they have a lot of auto attackers, imposing presence at 16, you know, you can actively counter people in game just with a few different talent choices. Now that does change your playstyle, and maybe you don't like that playstyle. That's also, you know, if you're playing something you enjoy, you'll probably play better.
I am a victim of taking the same talent every freaking time, no matter what.
Well, like, there are some characters there are some characters that fall into that a bit more. Like Nova, for instance. Nova in most cases has the same talents up until 13, and then there's only two deviations that most people do.
Mm-hmm.
Other than the heroic changes. I mean, there's just certain characters that have such a refined play style that everyone expects you to do, that they kind of fall into those places.
I thought you were only supposed to take triple tap.
Yeah, that's the only talent. No other talents.
Best talent.
Wait until 10. You close your eyes, you pick your first three, and then you triple tap.
How important is stutter stepping?
Oh, yeah, that's the attack move thing. Stutter stepping is really good on auto attack characters.
Okay, I don't... You can do it without hitting A, right?
Yeah, it's so much easier to do it with A left click, though.
All right, I'm going to have to practice that with A, because I feel like I'm just clicking more in this game than I've ever clicked on anything in my life, and I stutter step, but I don't feel like I'm like very good at it. So maybe the A trick is
another thing I would recommend is playing with SmartCast on release, because it's exactly the same as playing normally. Like, so for a Stitch's Hook, you would normally like just you boot up the game for the first time, a Stitch's Hook. You would hold down Q, figure out where you want to aim it, you know, move your cursor around, target it where you want it, and then left click. Well, SmartCast on release takes one step out of there. You just lift your finger off of Q, which you're going to do anyway, and then it throws it out automatically. There's SmartCast on, which doesn't give you those targeting reticles, which is really hard to play with.
Oh, yeah.
I don't recommend that for most people.
Yeah.
But SmartCast on release is just you change one option. It requires you to click less, and it'll have a meaningful impact on your reaction time, being able to get spells off quicker. It makes a really big difference.
So the default then is that you have to fully press and then let go of the button?
The default is you have to press the button and then left click to confirm that that's what you want it to do.
Okay.
And SmartCast on release is just pressing the button and then releasing the button. There's no, you don't have to control two hands to do one action, basically.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And then that'll allow you to free up your left click for stutter stepping and attacking a bit more.
All right. That sounds great, because I remember you talking about that in a video, but I think you hadn't decided whether you liked it yet or not.
I was trying it on Charizim, SmartCast on, with no indications, because everything he does is very like target focused.
Mm-hmm.
Like he does things on a player rather than a skill shot. And for Charizim, it actually feels really good and really responsive. But I tried playing Stitches, and, you know, I get the fishing hook upgrade, which increases the skill shot range by like 60% or something ridiculous. Right. And I'm like, well, I'm just missing all of these because I don't know. Like, I need that little arrow to show me where the hook's going.
Nice.
That's
awesome. I guess we're about to wrap it up here. I've been 101 questions. What are you looking forward to the most in 2016?
I love going to events. I really love going to these tournaments. And I mean, half of the reason is to actually watch the tournament. This is going to be some fantastic math. Half of the reason is to watch the tournament. Another half of the reason is to talk to just my friends that I've made in the community and viewers that just happen to be there. I try to shake hands and have a little chat with everybody. And I make business cards specific for every event that I hand out. And I don't know, I enjoy doing stuff like that. And then the other half, the third half, is, you know, normally I get a media pass, and the guys for that work for Blizzard, they've become such good friends of mine, and I always look forward to seeing them. And usually there's an open bar. And
right.
Yeah. So, you know, I just really like going to events, and there's a ton of events planned this year by the sounds of things, or at least more than last year. Last year, I was lucky enough to be able to go to London out of my own pocket for the launch event, and I had a blast. And the community team on EU actually took me out to Prague for the European Championship on the road to BlizzCon.
That's amazing.
And that was incredible. And I'm so thankful for that, and I really, really want to do more of that. So that's what I'm excited about.
That is amazing.
So where do you find where these events are? That's something I'd like to get more into. Like, after watching it at BlizzCon, actually at the event, that was a blast. And I really enjoyed that. But I'd like to start watching a few here at home, but I don't know when they're on. And I don't know where to look right now. So where do I find that information? Like, is there anything this weekend that I could watch on Saturday on my TV?
Well, there's a ton of local tournaments all the time, and those are a bit harder to keep track of. I would think Reddit would be the best place for that, the Heroes subreddit. For those, you know, local things. But Blizzard just released their schedule for, I think, just the spring.
Okay.
Their spring qualifiers or something. They've just released their global schedule for it. And there's a ton of stuff all over the world, and they have all the dates laid out on the website.
I think the problem with wanting to watch Heroes as an esport and consume that the same way that you would watch football or hockey is that it's just not at that level yet. So if you're looking to watch a production value tournament, you know, BlizzCon style event, that, you know, those are going to be, I think they're going to be coming out a lot more, you know, with these, you know, they've got three major tournaments or whatever we're going to call them that are specifically put on by Blizzard, you know, going on between now and BlizzCon. I think, was it three? I don't know.
I'll believe you.
But, you know, and then the whole road to BlizzCon, but that stuff is, it's not like, you know, you sit down and on a Saturday kick back with your feet up and watch Heroes. You know, I think there's, you know, you have to almost just flip through Twitch and look on Reddit and see what's going on. And then even at that, it's not going to be the same production value that you're getting out of a major, you know, Heroes of the Dorm or Heroes.
Yeah. I was going to say Heroes of the Dorm was put on by ESPN last year. I would imagine they're doing another one of those because it was super successful.
That was great. I don't think I'd be able to go, but I absolutely watch that.
So worth going. Dorm, at least the 2015 Dorm. If they do another one, was one of my favorite events of the whole year, and I went to just about every single one of them.
That's awesome. Yeah, I just don't think that esports, or at least Heroes, yet is kind of at that level where we're able to just sit down and consume it on the same level that we consume regular sports. And I look forward to it getting there. I don't know what that looks like just on a week to week basis though.
So I was looking on their website. They have a heroesofthestorm.com/esports now, and they have like a This Week in Esports featured news and stuff. So I don't know how often they're planning on updating this, but this could grow into something prominent in the future.
That was the last question I had on here, but I do wanted to ask you one more.
Sure.
What does the future hold for you in terms of Overwatch? Are you going to be, I know even in the, just the time that the beta was up, you and some of the TGN guys jumped in with both feet and were just rocking it. Are you looking at turning some of your streaming and your, what you're doing, into a Overwatch or?
Definitely. Especially for TGN. We, really like team oriented games on Squadron, and, you know, Overwatch is the quintessential shooter for me, as far as I'm concerned. Even from the moment it was announced, I just loved every character that I saw. Like, I saw the opening cinematic, and then I went and bought a Winston shirt, and I wasn't even sure why I bought it. I was just like, I love him. You don't understand. I bought one for me and for my girlfriend, actually. I was like, we're going to wear this together. I love Winston.
What is it? I don't know, but it's awesome. I've said so many times that I'm going to love the game. I know I will. But I almost don't care. The whole IP just is like, it just grabbed me, and I'm like, this is amazing. I love this. Give me a shirt. Give me something, please. I will proudly wear this.
Absolutely. I have a background in shooters, and I've been looking for an FPS for a while. I don't really like Counter-Strike, and I'm not too sure why. But I've loved every minute I've spent in Overwatch. Mm-hmm. I can genuinely say that, hand on heart. Loved every minute I've spent in that game. So absolutely, it's going to be part of my production. I don't know how much, because it is so hard to commentate and play at the same time. So mm-hmm. I would have to come up with some other.
Yeah, some other that game requires another level of focus. It's not quite as, I mean, MOBAs require to pay attention, but you can get away with
it. There's downtime in MOBAs, though. Like, oh, I'm just in lane, just soaking XP. Let's talk about nothing for the next 2 minutes, you know? Yeah. Whereas Overwatch, it's like, oh God, what's coming around the corner? Can I shoot him in the face and talk about what I'm doing at the same time? I don't know. Let's see.
Yeah, and I don't know. Until I really get in and learn all those heroes, like, there's this another level of just focus that I've got about trying to figure out people's ulties and timings and, you know, all that. That'll come in time. But I know you put out several Overwatch videos, and I was getting pretty hyped, thinking that maybe you're going to add that to your catalog as well.
That's the plan. From I haven't read the post yet, but I think the beta was just delayed even more.
Yeah. Jeff Kaplan said that they were pushing it back.
Oh, Kaplan, you're breaking my heart.
I know, but I mean, you watch those developer, just the little candid, you know, the 8 minute mm-hmm. videos, and it's just like, as long as we get that communication, then I'm good. I'm totally good to go.
Yeah, that's huge. I think being transparent with the community is something that they're doing very well.
Yeah,
I had the. Oh, excuse me. Go ahead.
No, go. I will follow up after.
I had the opportunity to go to the Blizzard headquarters last year, and we were invited out to play Overwatch before the beta. Okay. This was right before Lucio was announced, and they have like a media room. And we sat down and we looked at the new content that was coming out, and they let us ask questions, and they were super responsive about everything. And then we just went and played for 3 or 4 hours just straight. And the only reason we stopped was because they turned the lights on. We were like, all right, it's time to go eat. And we were like, what? No.
No, I'm not hungry.
Then we went out to dinner with the lead producer and some of the game designers, and just the passion they have about that game. Like, genuine passion. They were all smiles when they were talking about it. They were so excited about everything that they're doing. And it was just so encouraging to see. I think that game is going to have a really bright future. Really bright.
Absolutely. We had Mick Montgomery on the show a couple weeks ago, and he made one comment that kind of stuck out to me, though, that we've not seen in Blizzard's past where they put up a beta for a game and then just pull it down for this amount of time. And he kind of took that as a red flag that maybe there were a lot of concerns and a lot of things going on in the background. What's your take on that?
My take on that is we got a bare bones version of what the game does have to offer. And in order to refine the experience and to make it better, it's going to take a lot of, like, their vision of the game and what we played in the beta. I think they're two incredibly different things.
Mm-hmm.
Just based off what they've said they want to do, what they've announced that they want to do. And again, the ideas that they, you know, the feedback that they're constantly getting and tweaking.
Mm-hmm. So it's not a cause for alarm, really, as much as
I don't think it's a cause for alarm.
Time to refine and to.
I think that the last time, well, I guess Hearthstone came out after Diablo, didn't it? I'm pretty sure. All my timelines getting so screwed.
Yeah, I think it did, but I've slept since then.
Well, you know, Diablo came out, and it wasn't received well. Diablo 3,
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't received well. And I played it. I tried to love that game. I tried so hard, and it just wasn't for me. And it went a long time being close to the same game And then Reaper of Souls comes out, it's completely different. And I went back and played and I fell in love with it. Now I play every single season, and every single season gets better and better and better and better. I just don't think they want to have the same circumstance as that. I mean, they went from that to Hearthstone, which was a massive success, way more than I think Blizzard ever thought it was going to be. And I think they're being very careful with Overwatch because they know all eyes are on them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess Heroes of the Storm came out after that, too.
Yeah.
And, you know,
well, yeah, and that's – there's been quite a bit of criticism on Heroes, yeah. but I would say that it's doing pretty dang well.
I don't even think about Heroes. It's just part of my life now. I just accept it as a part of me.
Well, I could very easily turn this into a complete Blizzard podcast and start talking for another 2 hours, but I think we've basically banged this particular show's topic into the ground. Daryl, did you have any other questions about Heroes?
No, I don't think so. I just need to look for some esports to watch here. Is just kind of what I need to go look for now.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that ESPN embracing esports is going to have an immediate impact on a lot of things. And quite honestly, if you're just wanting to watch stuff, Twitch is the best place to do that, and you could stream that to your TV too. But it's not going to be that production quality that we got at BlizzCon. But it's definitely still fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
I would recommend Palytime's stream if you hadn't been watching that. But
I'm not necessarily esports, but I talk like I am.
that's the great thing, though. It's the full package. It's the way that you present it and the way that you're doing it is fun and unique and different than what a lot of people are doing. And I think that's. I wish you all the success in the world. I think you're doing great.
I appreciate that. I have some of the Dawnbreaker, who works at Blizzard. I met him at BlizzCon last year.
Mm-hmm.
And no one really knew who I was. Or I guess 2014. I'm still not used to the new calendar year. But I met him at 2014. And he was like, oh, hey. I introduced myself. He was friends with some of the people that I met up with. And I was excited to meet because I had watched their content. You know, I introduced myself and he was like, so what do you do? And I was like, oh, you know, I make YouTube videos, do some Heroes of the Storm stuff. And he was like, oh, I'll look into that. You know, I'm excited to see that. And he, after he heard that, he gave me like a mouse pad, like a Heroes of the Storm exclusive mouse pad.
Mm-hmm.
And, I used that mouse pad into the ground. Like, I'm still using it. It's still here and it's like peeling up and everything, but I love that little mouse pad. And, he met up with me at BlizzCon this year, and you could see the excitement in his eyes because he watched my channel grow into what it is today, and he was so excited for me, and I told him about the mouse pad, and I really think that made his day. You know, that looks
that's awesome. I love that, man. I just love that. I love that about this world that we live in and this, you know, this gaming ecosystem and meeting these people and, you know, and that they're all just people, but you're making a difference, you know?
Yeah.
Well,
a cool moment for me. I know this is a little off topic. You're familiar with Kaldor, caster.
Mm-hmm.
I did a lot of work with him. And when we were at the Blizz HQ, we went by their server room and they had a ton of TVs on the wall. Or, you know, not their server room, but, you know, the guys who sit on their computers and type away for server stuff.
Oh, yeah. Like
and they
the,
had a
the knock or whatever it is.
Yeah. They had a ton of TVs on the wall. And prominently featured was Kaldor, right on the main monitor. And I was like, oh, I work with him.
It's you.
That was a really full circle moment. You know?
That's
cool.
Well, if you guys have anything to add to this topic or have any questions about future topic, you can feel free to email us at theshow@trainingdummies.com or head on over to our website and leave us a voicemail at thetrainingdummies.com.
It seems fate. Us together.
You have my gratitude.
We make a great team.
I'm sure glad you're around.
Well, if it ain't my favorite person.
You have your uses, don't you?
You have quite a talent there.
Together, our victory is assured.
Good enough.
All right, shout outs. Hey, Rob, I've got you first this time.
Oh, wow. Hey.
Oh, man. I know, hey?
Dude, Pally Time, thank you so much, man. Like I mentioned at the top of the show, we've been emailing back and forth for months, and I know you've had some stuff going on lately, and I just really, really, really appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule to come and hang out and chat with us.
No problem, man. I enjoyed it.
Special shout out to the raid team. We are 13 heroic, and what's crazy is that we actually killed Manoroth before we went back and killed some of the other bosses.
I know. That was awesome.
I know. I was talking to somebody about that the other day. And he's like, wait, you killed Manoroth, but you haven't killed Tyrant Velaryon. I was like, yeah, I didn't want to. If it were up to me, I still wouldn't have done it. But yeah, definitely the raid team for that. To one of the guys on our team, Asta, he power leveled me to level 70 in season 5 of D3 tonight. He dragged a couple of us through, and it took him, I don't know, what was it, like 30 minutes or so.
What are you playing?
This season, I went with a Crusader because I was wanting to do something that I hadn't really put a lot of time into before. So we'll see how that goes. I'm kind of excited to at least fill out that set and see how that goes. But of course, Jab and Justin, couple buddies that are always ready to jump into heroes at any moment. So shout outs to those guys. Daryl, how about you?
Guild on Deathwing, I had one job, and of course the raid team. Thank you, Pally Time, for coming on the show this evening and talking about heroes. Every time we do this, it's like, man, I gotta play heroes more. So hopefully this is the kick in the butt I need to do it, because I do enjoy the game. And as well, I want to give a special shout out to two members of our raid team who started their own podcast this week. And that would be Pink and Salty. And the podcast is called The Oversalted. I believe the website is oversaltedgaming.com. So you should go check that out. And the first episode was today. I really enjoyed that. Pally Time, do you have any shout outs?
Well, thank you both for having me on. I appreciate it. This has been a lot of fun. I would like to shout out my good friend Gillyweed. I work with her on Squadron, and I've known her for several years. She just started to get a lot of jobs casting. It's incredibly exciting. I'm so proud of her casting, you know, professional Heroes of the Storm events. And she was just announced as a brand ambassador for Jinx, which is cool. It's really cool. So all of the good amazing feelings towards her.
Yeah, man. Good for her, man. Who doesn't love Gilly? Oh, what do we got here? Is this me, Green?
Yeah.
Yeah. After 4 years, you'd think I know which text is mine. But hey, before we wrap things up tonight here, Pally, would you let everybody know where they can reach you or follow you or like you or stalk you or watch you or all those good things?
Or whatever they do. The mixture of all of those things. YouTube.com/MFPallyTime is where I post my personal content. I also work full-time for TGN Squadron. You can find us on youtube.com/games and twitch.tv/TGN. I'm pretty active over on Twitter if you want to follow me there, which is twitter.com/MFPallyTime. And I have a Facebook too, but you know, it's just obligatory, basically. That's why it's there.
That old thing.
All right. Well, that wraps up episode 116 of The Training Dummies. You can find this and past episodes of the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and thetrainingdummies.com. So until next time.
It's advice you can trust
woo!
From people you shouldn't.